It's not just home improvement. It's life improvement.
No, you're not alone.
The Frank Fontana Show.
Because I'm going to make this place your home.
On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hey, Chicago. And all you folks listening across the nation and the world on the World Wide Web at WGNradio.com/listen. Happy Sunday to you. It's me, Frank Fontana. Thanks for joining us here. Woo! Long night last night, Sean. It was a big night. Premiere of the new TV show, Downtown Shabby.
Big night for you.
It was huge.
Yeah.
We're waiting for the ratings, but all signs are leading to Home Run, which is fantastic. It debuted last night on FYI Network. Had a huge party. Had my family in town and stuff. It was really nice.
So did you party more, drink more?
Dude, I'm hungover. I'm not going to lie. It was a rough night. And then you had the stragglers at the party. Just didn't want to leave. They were like trying to kick him out at like one. Here I am, the host of the party, nodding off in the chair, and everyone else is doing karaoke in my backyard. It's all right. It's all right. Hey, on to today. We're going to recap some elements of the show later on at the end of the show. So if you did watch Downtown Shabby last night and you want to chime in and give your opinions, keep them positive because I won't listen to the negative ones. But, you know, you could share whatever you want. You can also text in 312-981-7200 is the number. And like I said, we'll have a little recap of the show at the end of this show. We have a star-studded lineup today, kicking off the first segment here with, you know, there's this, I don't know if you heard the news, there's this brand-new barbecue joint in town that is about to turn over this town's barbecue world. Right? There's a couple joints in town that are okay. This one is going to be the king because it's run by the king of all barbecue. Myron Mixon is joining us. His son David's in studio right now. We have the owners sitting in front of me right now, Dwight Badger. We have Amalia. We have Paul Stamper. And Myron's son David is in studio. Say hi, guys.
Hey. Hello.
Yeah, let's do it all collectively as a hello.
Hello.
That's right. We're going to be talking to the team at Myron Mixon's Smoke Show, which is opening up over on Clark and Grace, right in the heart of Wrigley. So on your way to the Cubs game, you can stop on by, grab some of the best barbecue you ever did taste, grab some cold brews, some specialty drinks. Like, Dwight, what's that one Myron drink you're talking about here? It's getting my palate wet.
Yeah, we have a specialty drink called the Myron Mixon.
The Myron Mixon.
Yeah, it's got lemonade in it. It's got tea, clove, simple syrup. It's pretty tasty.
But don't give away the secret ingredient. There's one secret ingredient there we cannot reveal.
Yeah.
But we will be talking to the king himself. And Myron is on the line. Let's say hi to Myron before we move on. Myron Mixon!
The king is here, Frank. How you doing?
Good, pal. How are you, man?
It's doing good. Everything's good in the barbecue hood.
That's right. And we had a little bit of a soft opening last night for friends and family. And from what your son's telling me, Myron, it's going to be a hit.
I think it's going to be a hit. Anytime you bring great food to Chicago, and Chicago is a great food town, now it's time for them to have great barbecue.
You're damn right. And a great-looking restaurant, might I add. That place is sharp. It's different from what you see in a typical Chicago style barbecue joint. I think it's got the real flavor of Myron's down south. You know, it's practical. It's not overdone. It's a good time, and it's all about good drinks, good food, and good people. And we'll be talking more with Myron and David, as soon as we get through this break here. We have another big celebrity guest joining us right after the 1:30 news. We're going to be joined by Nicole Curtis from Rehab Addict on DIY and HGTV. Yeah, you might have heard of her. Sean, she's good. She's like, she plays in my world. I like it.
Should be a great interview.
Yeah, she's got a new book coming out that we're going to talk all about. That'll be at around 2 o'clock, is that, Sean?
2 o'clock, exactly.
We got some giveaways, too, right? We got some Lou Malnati's.
Yeah, surrounded around her book and her history. We'll talk about it, her foundation, some great things. So
yeah.
Listeners, listen in, and we'll tell you when to call in.
Yeah, you're going to come up with that, right?
I will.
Good. Think about it. Think about a good one, a tough one. All right, cool. Let's see. And we're going to talk about cooking with bees. Yeah. Honey, fresh honey. We have a chef joining us who that's what he does. It's basically a restaurant that they grow their own. Do you grow bees? It's hive to plate, basically, is the concept. So they run their own bee. What do you call these things? Dave, help me out here. Is it a bee sanctuary? A bee...
Colony?
A bee colony. Right. So I guess the idea is that Chef Sean's going to be joining us. And they raise their own bees. They pollinate them. They collect the honey. And then they transfer that into amazing dishes for the restaurant. Really unique concept. Although I'm deathly afraid of bees. And he has an entire hive with him. This will be interesting. Hey, Myron, you're still hanging on there?
I'm still listening to you. If we talk about honey, we got a barbecue sauce that's got honey in it.
Well, just so you know, we're talking about some fresh honey with these bees and your formulas and seeing how we can maybe create a little marriage over here.
Sounds great.
All right, cool. All right, so listen, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get this rodeo started right after the news.
Testing, testing, uno, dos, tres, catorce.
He's the go-to guru for great design ideas.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
He's edgy. He's in your face.
The Frank Fontana Show. It's not just home improvement, it's life improvement.
Yeah, baby, and today we're improving your barbecue life right now. Because we're talking about the hottest new barbecue joint to open right here in Chicago in the heart of Wrigleyville, Myron Mixon's Smoke Show. And joining me live in studio are the owners, the founders, and the man, the myth himself, and his son, who's also a myth. Mythical you are, David.
Thank you.
And quite handsome, might I say.
Awesome.
Myron Mixon. Myron, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, Frank.
Hey, man, so we're talking about the buzz is beginning, man. We had a little soft opening for friends and family last night. Knocked it out of the park. People are talking about it. From what your son was saying, Dave, you were saying people were walking in off the street that you couldn't hold them back.
That's right, Dwight. We had some friends and family in to start with, and then he jumped out there on the sidewalk, and we started bringing in the Cubs fans and filled them up.
Yeah, man. So we're talking with Dwight Badger, who is the founder of Myron Mixon's Smoke Show. Dwight, tell us a little bit about the backstory, man. How did you get here? How did you meet Myron and David and this whole team he assembled here with Amalia Dallas? And we got our man here. Give it to me
Paul
again.
Paul Stamper.
Yeah. Paul, sorry about that. My brain is spinning with barbecue.
Yeah, so I had met Paul and Amalia a few years ago, and we all started talking about doing a restaurant. And started making barbecue for these guys at my house. I had a big smoker that I went and bought down in Dallas, Texas, and signed a lease on this place in Wrigleyville in December of this year.
What's the exact
December
address?
Last year. 3801 North Clark. It's the corner of Clark and Grace.
Great location, by the way.
Yeah. So then one night, I had too much coffee. I couldn't sleep. I was like, what am I going to watch on TV at like 1 o'clock in the morning? And I had a episode of Barbecue Pitmasters recorded, and I saw Myron on TV, and I had always been a big fan of Myron's. I had watched all the seasons of Barbecue Pitmasters, and said, I'm going to call Myron tomorrow and see if he'll partner with me on this restaurant.
I mean, who does that? Who just watches a TV show and goes, I'm going to call that guy and open a restaurant with him?
Dwight.
Yeah.
Well, I went down to my office the next morning, stared at my computer because I got Myron's number, and I said, Myron is the king of barbecue. He is the number one guy in the world of barbecue. Why would he even take my call? So ultimately, I said, all right, well, all he could say is no. So right. I made the call, and his son David called me back and heard what I had to say. And he said, well, no guarantees. Come on out and meet us. So the next week, I flew out to meet David and Myron. We met for about a day and a half. And Myron, at the end of it, said, hey, let's take the next step. I like it. I'm in. So
that's
kind of how it all started.
Dave, did you think he was nuts when this guy called you out of nowhere? He's from Chicago, sharp talking city boy calling you. Like, yeah, I want to open a restaurant with your dad. What was your first impression?
We get those calls every so often. So most of the time, you think it's just BS. But after meeting him and having dinner and a few drinks with him, we knew it was a real deal. So
that's awesome. Yeah, and Dwight has a successful history. I don't know if you want to share, but Dwight has done some wonders in the world of finances and built some phenomenal companies and has a great track record. So I can only imagine that this is going to be another one of those notches on the belt for Dwight and the team here. And Myron, how about you? Coming to Chicago, you got some competition in this town. There's some barbecue places here. What's going to be the differentiator other than obviously you? Talk to us about what's going to make this restaurant real special.
Well, the thing is, it's going to have all of my recipes in it. We're using my Myra Mix and smokers. We're using the wood selection that I use. I mean, it's going to be everything that I do. The guys that's going to be running the pits most of the time, trained by me, again, using all my recipes. But the thing about it is, all the knowledge and everything I've got came from my dad, came from his dad. I've been in barbecue all my life. My family's been in barbecue for generations. I'm from the South where barbecue started. And, you know, I don't think you've got that in Chicago right now. I don't believe you've got that kind of pedigree for barbecue in Chicago.
I agree with you. Paul, you're shaking your head, right? You would second that?
Yeah, everybody tries to do barbecue fusion and put their own spin on it rather than just the great classic Southern barbecue, which needs no spin. There's just no basic, this is barbecue, come enjoy it.
Exactly, I agree. And Amali, you'll be running a portion of the, are you in charge of the bar and the management side of things?
Yeah, I'm in charge of the bar side. I'll be the bar manager there. And
you have a ton of experience in this world,
thank
right?
Thank you. Yes, I do. I started my own restaurant when I was 23. I ran that for a few years, and then I started managing and bartending at different locations before I met Dwight. And started doing this. So
that's great. So you got a crack team here, Dwight. Great team assembled.
Yeah, another great part of the story, Frank, is you know, this last year, right after Myron and David and I signed our agreement to open this restaurant, we did that the first week of May. The next week was Memphis in May, which is known as the World Championship of Barbecue. And it's a great part of the story because we had just signed the deal. We were going to go down to Myron's cook school on Sunday morning, where he was going to teach all of our team for a week, all the family recipes and everything. And Myron, on Saturday, right the day before we were leaving, actually won his fourth World Championship of Barbecue Memphis in May.
And, that's huge! Congrats, man! That's fantastic.
Yeah. So you know, we've got the king of barbecue, the 4-time world champ of Memphis in May, the winningest man in barbecue.
You can't get bigger than Myron. I'm sorry to inflate your head, Myron. I mean, I know you're a humble guy.
Keep giving it to me, Frank. Keep giving it to me.
Right.
Hold back, Frank. Hold back.
Now, Dave, come on. Let's get real for a second, all right? We got your dad on the phone. What is it like living with your father? Let's just get down to it.
Tell him, son. Tell him how great I am.
Or you ain't coming home.
It is awesome. It's a true family business. We've got him, got daddy, myself, my brother, my uncle, all in it on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, we...
Everybody gets along perfectly, right?
That's right. There's no downs.
No downs. Tension. No family drama.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
It's
good heaven. Answer, son.
It's heaven.
Yeah. Now you can come home.
Now I can come home. Thank you.
So Meyer, Dave's your favorite son is what you're saying, basically, right?
Yes, that's what he's saying. That's what he's saying.
See how we get your dad in trouble? That's how we get your dad in trouble. We get him right back. That's great. Well, I can tell you, Myron, we're excited. I'm honored to be a part of this restaurant and to help design the vision and help bring it to life. And, you know, it's been a journey, as we know, and it's all leading up to this grand opening coming up. Dwight, why don't you talk about the grand opening quick?
Yeah, so when Myron won Memphis in May, he won Smoking Whole Hog. So he is the reigning barbecue champion of the world, Smoking Whole Hog. So we're going to do a grand opening on November 10th, 11th, and 12th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, where Myron and the team are going to, the championship team, reigning championship team, are going to come up, and we're going to smoke whole hog for 3 nights, have a all-you-can-eat whole hog dinner at Myron Mixon Smoke Show
fantastic.
Barbecue.
So, I can't wait.
I don't know if Chicago's ever had championship barbecue. I don't think they have. But,
I put money on it that they haven't.
But if they want to, November 10th, 11th, and 12th, they could get it. Myron's going to be smoking it himself Smoke Show Barbecue here in Chicago.
That's 3801 North Clark Street, correct?
That's correct.
All right, folks, Myron Mixon Smoke Show coming to Chicago. Grand opening November
10th, 11th, and 12th.
10th, 11th, 12th. Mark it on your calendar.
We'll be open before then, but we're going to do a grand event on November 10th. 11th.
And I'm sure Myron's going to be signing autographs, books, and, you know, all of his goods will be there. So if you're a fan of Pitmasters or a fan of fantastic barbecue, authentic barbecue, go check out Smoke Show. And what's the website or the Facebook page?
We're on Facebook, Myron Mixon's Smoke Show Barbecue, and we'll be launching our website this week.
Excellent. Guys, thank you so much for coming in. Myron, thank you, man. I appreciate you calling in, buddy.
Frank, it's always good to talk with you.
You got it. We'll see you for that grand opening. We can't wait.
Yes, sir. I'm ready to bust out a whole hog up in Chicago.
I'm ready to eat some whole hog, man, so bring it. All right, guys. Thank you, Paul, Amalia, Dave,
thank you.
Dwight. Thank you
thank
guys so
you.
Much.
Thank
we look
you,
forward
Frank.
To the grand
thank
opening.
Thank you, Frank. For
all your
help,
too. You got it. We'll take a quick break, and we'll get back to it right after that.
This is the Frank Fontana Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I hope you enjoyed that fun interview with the Mixon family and Dwight Badger and the team from Meyer Mixon's Smoke Show opening in November 10th, 11th, 12th. It'll be the grand opening. Go check it out, man. I had a great time designing it. It's a cool, cool place. It's right in the heart of Wrigley, 3801 North Clark Street, corner of Grace. We're still talking about food and restaurants. How you doing out there? Good to see you. How's the weather? Good. It's perfect. Yeah, it's a great day to just kind of walk around Michigan. It's beautiful outside. And in here, we're talking about something sweet. Not my wife, who is adorable, but honey. I'm a big fan of honey. A real big fan of honey. Hi. How you out there? A lot of people stopping by. Joining me right now to talk about the topic of honey and a new restaurant that just opened up called Bee is Chef Sean Patrick Curry. Hey, Chef. How are you?
Great, Frank. How are you?
Thanks for coming in, man.
It's my pleasure.
So you know I'm afraid of bees, right? Not afraid of them. I just don't like them because I got stung a lot as a kid.
You probably got stung by the yellow jackets. The honeybees, they're more, they care about pollen and honey and water. That's it. The yellow jackets I call thugs.
They're thugs.
They are. They're the ones who want your soda and your hot dogs and stuff. So
and they'll sting you to get it.
They will. They're brutal. These guys are more... resort-like, if you will.
resort bees. I like
exactly.
That. That's a new one. Tell me about how you got into the bee movement.
So I've been a chef for a while, and it was actually my two kids when my daughter was born. We work a lot of hours, and when she was born was right when on the news a lot came out about colony collapse, when all millions of bees were dying, and they couldn't figure it out. So I have friends up at Heritage Prairie Farm who I was talking to, and we just kind of added it up, and I asked them to teach me how to take care of the bees, and then I brought it to the workplace, and I've been fortunate enough the amount of support we get to do it. So I just wanted to have more of a higher purpose, if you will, than, you know, cooking food is great. I love being a chef, but I wanted to be able to contribute a little bit more,
yeah,
if that makes sense.
It's interesting that you chose bees. Do you have a passion for honey or sweets? Are you like into the pastry side of things?
No, I have a pastry chef. I love eating all the stuff she does. But no, it's bees pollinate a third of the world's food. And what really did it for me was, you know, when you have kids, you don't want to wake up one day and have to tell your kids you have to eat a third less. Right? And it's a big issue we have. So I do love sweets. I have a big sweet tooth. But the honey, once I started getting into it almost as a hobby, and then once you start tasting really good natural honey, you can't taste the other stuff. It tastes awful. So
and you brought some with you, right? You brought a fresh hive or what is this?
I brought a frame actually, from one of the hives that we have there.
So which portion of it is edible of the frame? And you folks, if you want to watch this, you can go to WGNradio.com/watch, and we have cameras set all over the studio that you can check this out. And we'll post these up on our Facebook page at WGNradio/Frank Fontana as well. I see like the cone portion of it. Can you actually eat the cone portion?
You can. It's great. It almost tastes like a bubble gum, if you will. It doesn't last quite as long. But yeah, a couple days, what I'll do is just take a spoonful off the hive, put it in my mouth and kind of chew on it throughout the day.
Does it give you energy? I mean, do you feel like it's rich in antioxidants?
It is, and it acts as a natural. If you have allergies, it really helps you with your allergies. I take a tablespoon every morning with some cinnamon, and you know, before my allergies were so bad, I'd have to wear sunglasses at times, and now they're almost gone because of it. Because you think about it, it's like a natural penicillin, if you will. The bees go around and pick up the pollen from the things you're allergic to. Bring it back, mix it with the nectar and the water. So when you take it, your body naturally produces this antibiotic. So it's fantastic, yeah. And it tastes great.
Yeah, I mean, they do sell, like, in the vitamin store, like, bee pollen.
They do.
As a health thing. Can you, with the resources you have, do you guys do that as well?
And we haven't yet. I'll be honest with you. We started this 2 years ago. And how much it's catched on with the local community for our restaurant. And I have the best food and beverage team I've ever met before in my life.
Now, this is through Hilton, correct?
It is. We're in the Hilton, yeah. But the restaurant—
In Oak Brook, right?
In Oak Brook, yeah. But we're really really kind of going at this as an independent restaurant. We're not stuck to the Hilton constraints and all that. We're really kind of running with it, with the hive to plate philosophy. So my new menu, you know, I have 80% of the menu items have the honey in it. I didn't want to go too crazy with it. So
even your entrees, give me an example of one of your keynote entrees that involve, you know, some good homegrown honey.
So from the spring menu, we have, it's a lamb rack dish that I have on there with a cider honey glaze on it. And, you know, when I put it on there, you know, lamb is kind of, you don't know how people are going to receive it. It's my biggest seller.
Really?
I go through so much, and it's from
Viking
Farms.
Is it on the shank still, or is it like
it's a rack.
A rack.
With some potatoes and some Swiss chard from our garden. And I got to tell you, we're going through it. I have trouble keeping up with it at times. We're going through so much.
You know, it's great to hear that a large corporate owned entity, even though being, you know, the individual feel.
Sure.
I mean, you just mentioned From Our Garden. What does that mean? I mean, does the Hilton, you know, brand now stand for this concept?
Yes, we do. Portfolio, our management company, also has a lot to do with it. They've supported it. When I came on 2 years ago and kind of pitched this philosophy that I have about sustainable, seasonal, fresh products, and they really embraced it. I don't know about the rest of the Hilton hotels, but I got to tell you, the amount of support we get from the community, from Hilton, from our ownership group, I've never seen anything like it before. It's great.
I mean, as a chef with a vision, that's got to be liberating for you, right?
It is. But, you know, before it was kind of like, okay, let's get the chef bees so to kind of keep them happy like a hobby.
Do you keep them in the restaurant?
We keep them. I have them outside the restaurant now, but I was just my general manager gave me this project. He wants to have an observatory hive in the restaurant.
That's what I was thinking for decor reasons and ambiance and interest and talking points. It would make a great piece.
Yeah, we can do classes for kids. Like if we have a slower time during the day, I can bring in kids from the local school. You know, our goal is to really promote how important this is. And when you have delicious food that you use the honey and you show a practical purpose on it, it really catches on, and we need them. I mean, if we don't have bees, we're in huge trouble.
This is fascinating. I have so many more questions. Unfortunately, we do have to take a quick break here. We're talking about really the concept is hive to plate.
Absolutely.
It's a new movement. The name of the restaurant is B.
Just B, yeah.
Right. That's awesome. Modern farm cuisine. We're going to learn more about what's on the menu. And how Chef Sean is a certified beekeeper. And I'd like to learn more about beekeeping.
Absolutely.
I've changed my tune on it. I won't be afraid.
Good.
I'll pet a bee if you'd like.
I don't know about petting them, especially on a rainy day like
no,
this.
They're not happy. They're not happy. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll have more with the chef and the bees when we come after that.
The show that puts the improv in home improvement. It's Frank Fontana on 720 WGN.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We're talking bees. We're talking honey. We're talking with Chef Sean of the new restaurant Bee in Oak Brook over in the Hilton. Chef, thank you for coming.
It's my pleasure. I love being here.
And then you love talking about bees, too.
I do. I'm kind of the Cliff Clavin when it comes to bees. A bunch of useless facts.
Just pull up a glass of honey and talk to me about it.
Absolutely.
It's really fascinating and getting deeper into the story of managing the bees and how it's integrated into the restaurant. And you actually feed these bees special food, right?
We do at times, yeah. In the spring, we give them pollen patties. Because after the wintertime, they get weaker, especially in the Midwest area. So we feed them pollen patties. We feed them sugar water as well, which helps them build up.
Pollen patties, is that something you whip up in the kitchen? I mean, how does one make a pollen patty?
I buy them. I'm not quite sure what the recipe is.
You serve it up on a little dish with a little napkin, tiny little fork.
So nice garnish on it.
Nice garnish on it. Of course, it's the Hilton. Why not?
That's the next step for the bees.
Right. Yeah. We treat our bees really well here.
Absolutely.
And you have to, because they got to produce a good product. And I'm sampling right now one of the honey cinnamon scones. Uh-huh. It is out of this world. And if anybody dares to tell me they don't taste the honey difference on this, I would laugh in their face because this truly tastes different to me.
It's crazy, isn't it? My pastry chef, Erica, she always makes a joke that I go and do all the dirty work and she gets to do all the pretty stuff because her pastry items are just amazing. So
yeah, and during the break, Chef Sean actually allowed me to taste a piece of the comb. Is a comb, right? Uh-huh. With a little bit of honey on it. It's amazing. I mean, if I actually had that in my home sitting on a rack just like this, I would do that probably daily. I just take a scoop and I feel great. Right.
It's a good sweet fix. It's good for you as far as sugars are concerned. I mean, it's the most natural product on the
low
planet.
Low glycemic.
Absolutely. And it's the only food source that natural food source on the planet that doesn't have a shelf life. It never goes bad.
Yeah. It actually made, like, I had a little bit of hangover. I actually feel a little bit better. Is this a proven fact? Can we verify this?
I can't prove it, but
I
like
tell
it.
You. I could sell it. I feel better. I don't know if it's the sugar, but I feel better.
Sure, I like the way it sounds.
Right. And now, so the restaurant is currently open?
Absolutely. We opened up the beginning of August, and we're off to a good start.
Tell me about it. Like, what's been the response from people? Because it's a very unique – I've never heard of it before. Maybe it exists somewhere else, I'm sure, but I've never heard of it here in Illinois.
It's really amazing when we opened up. You know, we were fortunate enough. We hired some of the best staff I've ever seen who not only do their job well, but they believe in the cause. So when our guests come in, you know, the cooks, my chefs in the kitchen, they put everything into it because they know how important the bees are. And we kind of live by the dream that the better we do, the better the bees will do, right? Because we bring more marketing to it. And it's interesting how many conversations I get into during the day, whether it's with the team. And when guests come in, they ask about it all the time. Not only about that it's delicious, but can they buy it? What's it take to start them up? You know, there's two local country clubs that have asked me to help them install beehives and teach them how to do it as well.
Do you have this at home as well?
No. Where we live, my yard's a little bit too small to – we have a lot of families in the neighborhood. And a little
freak
cautious.
Them out a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
I can imagine. I mean, I was a little afraid of bees before, you know, we started, but now I'm not.
No, these are northern Italian bees. And
that's why, because they're paisanos.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
They care about water, nectar, and pollen. I mean, they really do. The honeybees, they build flight patterns to where they have to go. They're very hygienic and systematic. The only way they would really get mad at you is if you try to go into their hive.
Yeah.
Then they get defensive. Not aggressive, but defensive about their home, so...
So I guess we got some texts coming in. Folks, if you want to talk to Chef Sean about beekeeping and how to cook with honey, feel free to chime in here. Either text us 312-981-7200 or give us a call. Aside from your the lamb recipe,
absolutely.
What would be your second bestseller using the honey?
Well, Erica has this dessert, which is our signature, and I told her we got to take it everywhere we go. It's called milk and honey. So it's a twist off of a tres leches cake. That she makes a honey cake and then soaks it in caramelized leche and then uses the honey on the plate naturally and builds this kind of granola mix, if you will, that's coated in the honey. So there's different layers of milk and different layers of honey on it. And we have some of our edible flowers from our garden on there. And it not only is it one of the most beautiful desserts I've ever seen, but it's just out of this world. And it really represents what we're trying to push with the honey. It's fantastic.
It sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. And the other portion of the farm-to-plate idea and the hive-to-plate idea, you guys actually have your own garden?
We do. We have so around the restaurant, probably have about 900 square feet. I mean, I was out there a couple of days ago pulling out some of our beets. We have Swiss chard out there. We had tomatoes. They just had to go bye-bye because of the season. And then some of the land a little bit further away is where we had like our cucumbers and other stuff that aren't quite as pretty.
Yeah.
The goal is next year to put in a couple fruit trees. And what we're learning our second year into this is we have a horticulturalist on property that we really want to build. Not only are we seasonal and sustainable, but the produce that we're growing was good for the bees. Like they love our basil plants. So we're going to find
a place. Does it change the flavor? When they eat a certain thing?
Absolutely. The more the bees focus on one thing, It definitely creates the flavor of the honey. We have Bossa trees on property that I think is what gives it that really neat, unique aftertone, if you will, when you eat the honey.
Yeah, I can try to describe what that aftertone would be. It's almost like a nutty, mm-hmm. Would you say it's like a rich, nutty type of taste?
It is nutty with just a hint of it's not mint, but it kind of reminds me of just a hint of that.
Not clove, but in that family of minty, clovey kind of.
Absolutely, and that might be the basil as well. Yeah. Basil has a tendency to do that as well. So.
Interesting, and we have some text coming in from the 214. Question, do you use bee bread in your cooking or personal life?
Bee bread. So, yeah. So honey bread?
You're I'm using not sure. The honey? Bee bread.
So at our restaurant where our signature bread is, Erica uses the honey and has her own sourdough starter that we use. And instead of serving, I hate serving butter with really good bread.
Yeah.
So we actually do fresh ricotta and honey that we serve with it as
really?
Well.
Really? Do you mix those two together?
No, we keep them separate so people can use, like, usually what I suggest is you spread the fresh ricotta. And then drizzle just a little bit of honey on there. It's fabulous.
Wow.
It's awesome.
That's an amazing idea because being Italian, we use a lot of ricotta cheese. Mm-hmm. To do that with the honey is a great idea. What is the look of the restaurant? Does it fit the theme? Is it very organic? Describe the decor.
So our it's the best way I could put it is casually dramatic, right? So so it's neat when people come in.
Sounds like my wife.
Right, exactly. When you come in, it's really cool that it could be a place to have a high-end dinner. We do a lot of chef's dinners. Or a celebration, a birthday celebration. Our bee bar, if you will, and patisserie. It's a great place to come after work for a happy hour type environment.
You guys do honey-based cocktails as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have a honey martini that one of our bartenders put together. It's just incredible.
You could have brought some of those.
No, actually, not sure I don't if it would have made the trip here.
I don't need the alcohol. I'm detoxing right now. Hey, got some more texts coming in from 708. Hey, they just text in the folks who had a question about the bee bread, also known as purga. Is an extremely nourishing food made of raw honey and pollen that roughly stimulates the bee bread made by honeybees in the hive.
Okay, no, we don't do that, at least not right now, no.
Interesting. I like how they sent that. Thanks for 214. Also, we have from the 708, where can I purchase your honey, which is my next question.
That's a great question. Everybody's asking us. I would say by next July to August 2017, I should have some. We're actually doing so well that
Keep enough in stock.
No, and at least have enough for the restaurant. We have about 300 to 400 pounds we're getting out of this season, and we're doing pretty well. So I need to keep it in for the restaurant itself. So next year I'll probably add on a couple more hives and we'll sell it retail.
Sounds good, Chef Sean. Thank you so much for coming in on Sunday. I know you're a busy guy, and keep on keeping on, man, and love the bees.
Absolutely, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You got it.
He's a dad. He's a designer. He's the guy who can make your house a home. And maybe make your husband a little handier.
Just know you're not alone.
This is the Frank Fontana Show.
Because I'm going to make this place your home.
On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's me, Frank Fontana. We're here till 3 o'clock. We're here every Sunday from 1 to 3. Talking about all things that make your home tick. Issues outside the home and inside the home, on the roof, under the roof, in the basement, and the relationships that happen in between. We're design-centric. That's what we do. As a matter of fact, we have some cool information about the world of design here in Chicago. The COD, the College of DuPage Interior Design Program, receives a huge honor. The College of DuPage in Glen Ellyn is one of 10 schools in North America to be recognized as a National Kitchen and Bath Association's as part of the National Kitchen and Bath Association with the 2015 Excellence in Education Award, which honors NKBA-accredited programs. The COD's Interior Design Program recently received 7-year reaccreditation, which is great, from the NKBA. For the Kitchen and Bath Design Certificate, the award validates their efforts to maintain the high quality of interior design programs they run right now. You know, if you're looking to get into interior design, it's a great school to check out. It's the College of DuPage In addition to the Kitchen of Bath certificate, the Interior Design Program offers an Associate in Applied Science degree, Interior Design and certificates in computer applications like CAD and 3D Max, Lighting and Sustainable Interior Design Services, and an interior an advisory board of industrial professionals like myself ensures the curriculum remains current with emerging trends, industry safety, and building codes, which are really important, and in-demand job skills while providing professional and networking opportunities. So if you're a budding designer or thinking about it or a career change late in life, this would be a great place to check out the College of DuPage. That's one little design nugget. Next, we're talking interior design trends. Stylish buyers are flocking to this fall. We're going to be talking to Nicole Curtis shortly as well about her new book. But it seems to me that airy layouts, floor-to-ceiling windows, are the trend, according to this article from TheObserver.com, talking about high-rise and residential. And very neutral, very modern is what the trend is in the cool. Buyers have moved past showy appliances and fixtures, they say. They want appliances that blend seamlessly into the overall design of the space. For example, the kitchens at 150 Revington used an integrated refrigerator and dishwasher with seamless panels. And it always seems to appear custom, which I think is kind of cool if your place is a little more modern. But if you're into the vintage vibe, that's cool. I mean, our show Downtown Shabby is all about that. We restore vintage homes, but modernize them. A little different from our next guest. You know her as the Rehab Addict. She's an author, TV host, all-around amazing gal. Nicole Curtis, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for joining us this Sunday.
Yes. Well, I kept forgetting what time, so I've already called in 9:10.
Did you? Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Well,
you know what? It's just we're getting ready to fly out, and you know when you're, like, scheduled backed up to back up, and I'm just always worried that I'm missing something, and I'm like, oh, I forgot.
So, I know. It's crazy. But, Nicole, we love you here in Chicago, and we love your show, Rehab Addict, and your new book. When do you find time to do this? You're a mother. You're a rehabber. You're a TV host. I mean, how does it all work?
I don't sleep. I basically have no social life, and that's it. So I wrote the book in between, you know, day napping, and I pretty much crammed it into like 9 minutes before I needed to go to the printer, and that's no lie. The publishing world got turned upside down.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They were like, this is not how you do a book. I'm like, this is the only way I can do a book. So I don't know what to tell you.
Right? It's not easy writing a book.
Yeah. No, it's horrific. And especially because the amount of time it takes to do it, your life changes. Your story changes, especially when you're doing a memoir like I did. So it was just constantly, there's so many different versions of the book that even when the final one came out, I'm like, oh, okay. So it's just kind of funny. But
at what point did you decide, all right, I'm going to put the pen down. Like, I can't keep revising this and my life has changed because you recently had a baby.
Well, no, honestly, it was, we went to New York to do final edits. That was on a Monday. That turned into a Tuesday, a Wednesday, a Thursday, a Friday, a Saturday, a Sunday. We were still there. And then the printer was literally like, if I don't have this manuscript today, it's not getting printed. It's going to be like a January delivery. So jeez, that kind of pushes it a bit. So that's what did it. But trust me, I could have rewrote that book a million more times.
So what are the fans going to expect out of this book?
Well, I would say this. Everyone knows never to ask me for design tips because I'm definitely not going to give those out. And
are they just coveted? Is that why? I mean, why? What is it?
No, I don't have any. I mean, I really don't think there's ever anything new in design. We all copy it. It's all full circle. And for me, I really look at historic structures and I try to recreate it, you know, and put a little bit of modern spin on it just so that we can have electricity in houses and toilets. Yeah. But, you know, that's about it. So, you know, design-wise, I truly believe that a house should always be an expression of who you are, as long as it's not like a dirty, you know, dirty hoarding, you know, mess. That's never good. But, you know, my houses are very eclectic and they're homey. People come in and I think sometimes they expect, you know, if they don't know me very well, they expect they're coming to like a designer's house. They expect everything so sterile and perfect
right.
And everything. And no, I've homes, not houses. So with the book, it is just my story. I think my story has a lot more to offer people than, you know, my work in design. And, you know, I went really from rags to riches. And it's always, you know, one of those moments where I tell people, like, you can do anything you want. I mean, trust me. No one said to me, you know what, Nicole Curtis, we think you would be an excellent, you know, thing to do design, and overnight you're going to be successful and you're going to be able to pay your electric bill. It took 20 years to get here. So, you know, it's just sharing those stories so that people realize that it isn't supposed to come fast. And usually things that come fast, you know, what they say about it, I mean, it's not always the best thing. So,
well, it's always fascinating too when people, Nicole, when people hear your story and they're like, wow, you know, you just came up overnight. You know, this was like, you just came out of nowhere. But it's really a 20-year overnight success story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I take a long time to do anything. But even when we started, you know, basically what I took is all my social media posts, I just took them 10 steps further. You know, people would ask, like, serious questions on social media. And I was like, that's just not the right medium for me to divulge personal details like that. You know, so I wanted to have it in a controlled space to where I knew exactly how it was being, you know, put out there. And also then I didn't have 10,000 people commenting on it every 5 minutes, you know? So,
yeah, oh, I'm with you. And you know, we do have to take a quick break, and I want to talk more about this. We're talking to Nicole Curtis, a host of Rehab Addict and author of the new book, Better Than New. We're going to learn more about who really Nicole is, and because we're not going to learn any design tips, we just found out. So if you're hoping for that, I'd just get off the line right now.
Right
out the window. But I do want to talk about it. You know, we do similar stuff in our world, and you know, our my world is actually kind of like the opposite of yours, where we take old homes, but we're modernizing based on the requests of the clients, which kills me sometimes because I'm all about what you do. Like, I want to restore the integrity of what existed. But, you know, I want to talk more about that aspect of dealing with people and working in this crazy world of television, reality of homemaking. It's insanity. More with Nicole Curtis right after this break.
The Frank Fontana Show. It's not just home improvement. It's life improvement. We're architects.
Welcome back to the show, folks. I'm Frank Fontana. We're talking design, specifically rehabbing, with Rehab Addict's host, Nicole Curtis, and author of the new book, Better Than New. Don't expect any design advice from Nicole. She doesn't know anything. She just hosts shows and writes books and lives a good life. Nicole, thanks for joining us.
That sounds fabulous, yes.
Actually, I know a lot
about design.
You do.
But I know about historical design and doing right what's right by property. I think that's, you know, that's always been my mission on HGTV and everything else is, you know, people are only going to design what we set an example for them to design. So
right.
For me, it was standing up and being like, I know you want to open up that dining room wall, but let me show you. Let me show you how bad this is going to be for the house and how much you're going to hate it 10 years from now when you're 3-year-olds or 10 and 12 or 15. You're not going to want this open floor plan design.
Right.
And I can say this as experience from a mom. You know, just like when I have somebody say, you know, oh, we want, you know, we want these kind of countertops, or we want this kind of countertops. And I'm like, look at your life. This is not a good solution right now. You know, all glass, everything, and you have toddlers and dogs. You're going to be cleaning forever. So that's really how I got started in design was I was a house cleaner, and I knew what materials lasted, what could be cleaned, what was washable, what was easy to maintain, and what looks great for years to come. And I just took it from there.
Nicole, how much do you get? Do you deal with clients on a basis, or can we basically?
No.
Oh my God, no. Yeah,
No. More personal clients. I always laugh at people like I wear running shorts and raggy tennis shoes and drive an old truck. But there's certain things where I'm like, there's a lot of headache and heads just pulling your hair out and stuff. Working with private clients, I'm gonna be honest. I have thought designers that do. I just, I don't really have time for it anymore. And the thing is that I really enjoy doing my own projects. I mean, that's really why I created my business is that I enjoy working with me. You know, I like working with my crew and I like having, you know, the creative, you know, there's endless, like whatever I want to do, I'm going to do, you know. And, I used to always laugh. I'd say, you know, somebody would hire you to design something and then you design it. You spend all these hours on a design. And they're like, well, we don't think this is going to work. Then you sound like the design expert. I'm not really sure why you hired me. So
yeah, it's true. It's
yeah.
a slippery slope, this whole design thing. You know, so you, so for real, like for folks who, you know, are fans of the show, we're talking to Nicole Curtis from Rehab Addict, from HGTV and DIY Network. She has a new book, Better Than New. We're talking about vintage homes and, you know, restoring them back to their former glory. Now, I live in a 105-year-old Victorian home, Nicole. And I've learned to embrace my crooked floors and my 3-inch dip in the left corner of the home. How often do you just leave this stuff and let it go? And
always.
Always, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I live in an old house. I mean, I left the other day because my rescue dog, Lucy, did a secret pee in the house. And I'm like, well, you know which way the floor slopes, don't we?
Yes.
We had a puddle on the other end of the room. But, you know, as long as it's not hazardous, and it's not keeping me from living my life, right?
Right.
But I mean, I mean, I'm only 40 years old, and the facial cracks I have going on, you know, hello. It's kind of the same thing with your house. You have to embrace it. There's things about it, you know, when your woodwork has discoloration or it's darkened or it's, you know, my worst fear is I walk into a house and somebody has, you know, sanded down all the woodwork and like redone it and just kind of taken away the original age of a home. I like to walk in an old house and know I'm in an old house.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it kind of is. It's, you know, people get so antsy, and I'm a real estate agent too. And all my years, I tell people, don't do anything more than like change a paint color in the first 6 months of living in your home. And they're like, why? And I'm like, because it takes you that long to feel it.
Yes.
To know it, to know exactly what you want, you know. And I've had people, you know, you might have this in your house, but have the back servant stairs going into the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And every designer, kitchen designer in the world, you know, or most of them will say, cut this extra doorway off and we can get an extra pantry in your kitchen. So yeah. I'll have clients that are like, we don't want these, you know, original stairs anymore. So what I do is I duct tape the opening up, right? Close it off. And I say, you live for 1 week without using the entrance and you tell me how it goes. And you know how many people like come down the stairs and then run into the duct tape because they automatically want, you know, that shortcut to the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I've saved so many old kitchens that way. It's just kind of giving them a real life experience with their ideas.
I love that. I love, you know, the duct tape like trick. I mean, come on.
The open floor plan thing, I grew up in a 1980s tri-level. My mom cursed her open floor plan because she had the informal dining room that opened to the kitchen. And, you know, as we got older, there wasn't any closure. Like if you cooked a messy dinner and you had guests over, they all saw it. So yeah. I learned that. Growing up, that's why, you know, when people want it now, I'm like, not gonna do it.
Well, that's all these people want, though. I mean, honestly, I mean, designing on our show too, we get into these 100-year-old homes and these younger couples. It's really the younger couples. They see they watch HGTV, they watch all these design shows, and they going with trend and to try to talk them off the ledge. And trust me, I do, Nicole. I mean, I'm a preservationist at heart. You know, I did very little to my own 100-year-old home. And at times, I feel like when people walk in my house, they like you, I'm sure, they have that expectation of, oh my God, this is going to be the most insane home. And then they come in, they're like, oh, this is really homey and this is really cute and really charming, but never that grand open feeling, because I kept the parlor room, I kept the entry, I kept the nuances of the historic home. But the new generation, not so much. They're pushing for all this modernism.
Well, it's because they're coming out of, I mean, here's the thing. When I was 18, 19, 20, 22, 23, right, I couldn't afford my dream home. I had to go to a starter home, right? Which people have lost the concept of this because interest rates were so high, right?
Right.
So my first interest rate on my first house was 13.75%.
Wow.
So I couldn't afford, you know, these you know, young couples now can afford exactly what they want when they want it, and then they haven't lived enough to have the experience of like, hey, let me just relax a minute and maybe the next house. You know, I remember my first kitchen I was designing, my first house, and I kept saying, I want this, I want this, I want that. And I had gone to Home Depot to do the kitchen design, right? Because it was all like 20. And this guy looked at me and goes, I'm going to teach you a phrase that's going to save you a lot of money and headache in your years to come. And I said, what's that? And he goes, next house. Do it in the next house. Like, keep in your budget, keep in mind where you're at, check yourself, you're 22 years old. You don't need a double oven and all this other stuff. I'm like, wow, okay. And I keep that in mind whenever I'm doing projects, too. It's always got to stay within the value of the home and what's right for the home.
Exactly.
And sometimes, you know, I live out of many homes right now. I have big homes, little homes. And you know, I know I love my galley kitchen and like my one little bungalow, right? Because you're not going to find that at any other house. And that's what's special about bungalows, is that they have this cute little galley kitchen. So it's kind of like, you know, you just got to love what you have and cherish it and realize that if you want something like that, you know, 100 years ago, they designed different floor plans for different people. So it's really just finding the old home. There are old homes that fit what you want. You just got to jump it up a notch or two.
You're darn right, Nicole. Hey, do you have time to hang with us for a little bit longer?
I do. I'm just I'm driving my dog around the city because she was being bored. She was getting ready to fly out. So exactly what I'm doing.
Cool. All right, good.
She's sitting here in the car.
Well, awesome. I'd love to open up the phone lines if you had a minute, and we'll have some folks who want to learn more about your book. Better Than New, and you're going to be coming to Chicago. You're coming to Evanston Sunday, October 23rd.
In a week, right?
Oh, yes. I can't wait. So it's from 1 to 3 p.m. at Cost Plus World Market at 1725 Maple Ave in Evanston. Great. I've shopped there before. It's a great place. And Nicole? Oh,
Cost Plus is amazing. I mean, I was, like, so excited when we did this program with them, but I have an 18-year-old that just got its first place, and I laugh because I have Salvation Army and garbage coffee tables in my house, and he has brand new stuff. So,
sweet. Especially at Cost Plus is great stuff. All right, hold on. Nicole's going to hang out with us just for a little bit longer. I'll open up the phone line, 312-981-7200. You could text in your questions as well for Nicole Curtis, rehab addict and author of the new book, Better Than New. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, folks. We're here till 3 o'clock. Right now we're talking to rehab addict and author of the new book, Better Than New, Nicole Curtis. Hey, Nicole. Thanks for hanging.
Hey.
How's the dog holding up? Is the dog doing good?
Oh, my gosh. The dog is just, she's not going to New York with us this week, so I haven't told her yet. She's very sad. So.
Oh, boy.
She usually travels with us, but, yeah.
So, Nicole, we have a bunch of questions. We got text messages. We have callers. You open for some questions?
Sure.
All right. Let's go with They're really hard hitting. Here we go with the first one from the 818. Are you married?
Oh, no, never.
No, never. What is that thing called marriage? All right.
You know what? My grandmother just passed away. They were married for 70 years. My grandfather is the greatest man in the entire world. Like, love, doted, honor. She did the same to him. And when you see that kind of example, I just have never been able to settle for anything that isn't that, you know, and maybe I'll find it when I'm like 75 and that'll be great, but I'm holding out. I don't want anything less than the best.
I'm with you.
That one.
I'm with you. 75 is a good age to get married. I think
so too. And have kids. I heard. No, I'm kidding.
Yes, you could. With the miracle of science, that could happen.
Exactly.
And here's another from the 814. How many kids does Nicole have?
I have two.
Two. One is 16, you said?
No, one is 18. One's a toddler. So,
All right. Let's see.
20-year stretch, my grandma called it.
Yeah, it's a good little break. It's a good little break in between to catch your breath, you know, from the first one. I got two little ones at home. I have a 2-year-old daughter and a 5-year-old son. It is a lot of work, but I love them to death.
Yes. Oh, I do too. And it's definitely fun.
It is.
A teenager. It has made having a child that's like moving out of your house and like becoming an adult is a very tragic thing for a mommy like me.
Yeah.
So this has helped me cope a lot.
Well, that's good. All right, let's take a call. We have Gene from Hoffman Estates. Hey, Gene, you're on with Nicole Curtis. How you doing?
Hi. I've been wanting to ask Frank forever, and now that there's two of you, I would love to get the breadth of two opinions.
Let's do it.
I have been waiting and waiting for the stainless steel trend to go bye-bye. It's so cold, it's so uninviting, and I think we can blame the yuppies or the Gen Xers or something who got the idea they wanted to live in a commercial kitchen. And I'm at the stage where I have to remodel my kitchen and eventually sell a house down the road in a few years. And I just detest the idea of going with stainless steel. I grew up in a supper club in Wisconsin, and I just feel like I'm back at work when I see stainless steel. And they've got the smudge proof, but that, you know, I still don't want to look at it. And I don't like the black either because that's not warm and inviting. And I just wondered if there's any clue of any hope for something different that has warm feelings and tones.
Nicole, you want to take a stab at that first?
Well, I would say this. Stainless steel really isn't a trend that we see in it's become so generalized that everyone does it. But I mean, just to let you know, if you want to spend $20,000 on appliances, you can get them in really great colors and designs of anything you want now. But of course, obviously no one wants to do that. So I think right now that trend is always going to be what buyers want right now. And if you're looking to sell your home, unfortunately, you're just going to have to grin and bear that one and remember that you're selling your home. So that's right. How it goes. But no, that's just one of those things right now. I'm really in love with the new professional line of white kitchens that they're doing. And I love using the classic lines too. So I have like a red stove in our house and things like that. So it's there for a while, just like granite, but know that, you know, there are other options in the world. They just cost a lot of money. So yeah. That's, you know, whatever is more readily available is going to be the cheapest.
Yeah, and Gene, Nicole hit it on the head, because you're selling. Now, if you told me you weren't selling, I think we could both offer you a slew of options that exist out there. But I think because you're selling, you almost have to stay on trend a little bit, because the majority of buyers are looking for those key hits of the granite countertops or the stone countertops with the stainless. Mm-hmm. It's just purely a force of habit, I would believe. But I do, you know, if you wanted something a little different and you're not going to sell right away, I could suggest, if your appliance package does allow it, or if you're going to buy a new appliance package, is a paneled appliance package, so it looks like it's part of the cabinetry. To me,
that would be better.
So
yeah.
It's not as offensive. And if you have a shaker style, you could create shaker style panels. You can have a carpenter do it, and they can assemble it. And so that would be my only, you know, suggestion there, without killing yourself in the budget.
All right. Well, thank you very, very much. I really appreciate hearing your opinions. Thank you.
You got it, Gene. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And folks of the Chicagoland area, you could get to meet Nicole Curtis coming up October 23rd right here in Evanston at Cost Plus World Market. She's signing and selling their – are they carrying the books there, correct?
Yes, they are.
Better Than New is okay. is the name of the book. And it's really not a design book, right? This is a book about – for me, it sounds like a motivational book more than anything, right, Nicole?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's just – people always say, like, Nicole, how'd you get through that? And I'm like, well, you know, they look at these houses and they're like, oh, my God, that's so beautiful. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, I can do that too. Or I flip homes. I'm like, well, that's not exactly what I do. So, yeah. You know, the book is hitting stores, you know, and we're also doing – I'm doing the second annual Burns-O-Matic Community Grants giveaway too. That's hashtag Find Your Fire, and we're giving away $30,000 in community grants this year.
Nice.
Last year was awesome, and people never believe that we're really giving money away like that. So that's another fun thing I'm getting involved with. And
you're also you're involved with children, right, in cancer. You like to raise money for them as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've had, you know. My head carpenter, Bobby, his daughter is 8 years old, and she's been battling stage 4 neuroblastoma.
Sorry to hear
and,
that.
And it's horrible. So, you know, when we do our open houses, people have always wanted to see my houses, and, you know, they've tracked them down, they've stalked me, they've showed up, and finally I said, you know, what if I just invite you here, but you got to give a $5 donation to get in? And people went gangbusters for it, and we've raised so much money for such great families.
That's
people
awesome.
Wait in line. They make it a party. They wait in line for hours. You know, we just did. I never announce them ahead of time because we have such a huge turnout. So we always do it like the night before or 2 days before. And we still have people that, like, last time we did that, we had 500 people through.
Wow.
In an hour and a half. So
that's great, Nicole.
We raise lots of money, and it's awesome because people don't realize that. You know, number one, cancer is horrible, but
yeah.
Two. Why, you know, people still have to pay their mortgage. They
right.
still have to pay their electric bill, their gas bill. So our money goes to, you know, helping those families put a little bit of dent in that, you know, big budget that they have to carry.
That's really sweet, Nicole. I love that you do that. And before you go, we have one last caller as a fan who would love to just say hi. Bonnie, you're on with Nicole Curtis and myself. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, am I? Oh, hi, Nicole. Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
Frank, yeah.
Frank, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
And Lucy.
And I'm hoping my rescue dog doesn't bark.
Okay.
Just really quick, I just wanted to thank you for giving us people with old bungalows. I live in a 1924 in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I've had it for 20 years and unfortunately haven't been to afford to do too much, but I still love my home. And thank you for giving us permission to love our old houses.
Oh, that's real sweet.
Hey, if we don't love our old houses, who's going to love the old versions of us?
That's
right?
True.
That's right. And also, I had breast cancer, and I started watching your show during my recovery. And the very first show that I tuned in, you were redoing the cupboards that separate my living room and dining room.
Okay.
Yeah, the like bookcases or cases.
Yeah.
Well, I had them in the attic, and in the meantime, I had someone go up there and bring them down for me. And I, you know, just did a little painting while I was sick, but what a difference.
That's awesome. That's a great story,
awesome.
Bonnie.
Yeah. But cool. My quick question was, it seems in my old neighborhood, and like I said, my house is 1924, some of the homes have been foreclosed on, and couples, I'm in my 50s, and couples in their 50s who are retiring are buying them. But what they're doing, and I just wanted to get your opinion on this, is they're not using the attic. They're knocking down the ceilings and making these real high, like, lofts or ceilings.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering what you thought about that.
Opening a ceiling isn't going to ruin my day as much as, like, opening a wall, because it's kind of dead space anyhow. In my particular, all the bungalows I've done have had such detailed plaster work and plaster design in the ceilings that I would never dream of that. But, of course, you know, every single one's different. And the high ceilings, you know, it's not a look that I love, but it is one that could easily be undone, you know, in 20 years from now. If, like, I were to buy that house and restore it, that one isn't going to, you know, ruin my day like somebody ripping out, you know, a dining room buffet or something like that. So it's a little different. I don't like mixing different looks in that wouldn't have been in the era. It just kind of, it throws me off when I look at something. You know, my big house in Detroit, I always take the, you know, the third floors and I make them master suites because I love big old bedrooms. But I actually raised the ceiling in there because I had an attic in there too, but I did it in a way that you didn't know it. It kept the same original shape and everything, but I just brought it up. So, you know, it's like I said, there's different looks that I see, and I always look at it like, all right, well, if I were to buy that house and restore it, how much work would it be for me to put it back to the original? And opening up a ceiling to the attic is not the end all.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll accept that. How's that one, Bonnie?
Yeah, Bonnie unfortunately had to go. But that was an awesome answer. I think we just lost Nicole, too. Well, I want to thank Nicole Curtis for joining us. She was an amazing guest. Nicole, if you're still listening, thank you so much. It was real fun having you on the show. You can see Nicole right here. Well, I think she's calling us back here. We could say goodbye formally. We got her back on here?
Yeah, sorry.
Hey, that's okay. I was just saying goodbye without you, but since you're here.
I know. So thanks for having me on. We're heading to New York right now. The book is in stores on Tuesday, and you can order it online. You can go to my website. We just did a funny little video that shows you kind of behind the scenes and
awesome.
Some of our work with Tessa. But thanks for having me on. It was such a pleasure, and I hope to meet you when I'm in Chicago.
I would love to. Maybe we'll come down and see you. Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rick. Bye-bye.
All right, you got it. All right, Nicole Curtis, there you have it, Rehab Addict. She's coming to town October 23rd from 1 to 3 in Evanston at the Cost Plus World Market. Go check it out. The new book is Better Than New. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk to Veronica, our very own Veronica Carter. She may not be a rehab addict, but she can make a damn good-smelling candle. I can tell you right now. We'll be right back.
The Frank Fontana Show. It's not just home improvement. It's life improvement.
Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
That's right. It's time for Frank's Fave. And this week's Frank's Fave comes from one of our very own WGN Radio news anchor, Veronica Carter. Hello, Veronica.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm smelling something delicious down here.
Yeah, I think I sent you mostly fall candles, which are all kind of food-based. So if you were hungry when you went into this whole thing.
I am, and it's making me even more hungry. Folks, if you ever dreamed of making your own scented candles, you're about to learn the secrets of a professional. You didn't know this, but Veronica Carter is an avid candle maker.
It's actually, to me, it's really easy, but there were a lot of trial and error when I started with this. But there are a ton of pages online. You know, you could just Google how to make your own candles. I just Googled how to make a soy candle because I make them out of soy wax.
Is this what this wax is?
Yes.
Soy?
Yes. So it's cleaner burning. It's not as smoky as paraffin wax.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, better for the environment and, you know, supports soy farmers, et cetera, et cetera. But if you just Google how to make your own soy candles, tons of pages will come up. And all of these people have experimented like I have on how to do it.
Did you make your own videos in the process, too?
I didn't make any videos,
oh,
no.
You should have.
Yeah, you know, and I used to be really, really into this. I had my own Facebook page on it. But I just am so busy with work that I don't do it except for mostly for a hobby now. I used to actually take them to craft shows.
You should actually. Yeah, I was going to say, you should take this to the next level because these, first of all, I got two questions for you. How do you get the wicks perfectly centered? Because I've tried this before, and that's my downfall. Is my wick ends up too far left or too far right. And I know there's got to be some trick for this. And then the scent. How do you get such a rich smell coming from this? Because I just opened up the pumpkin spice one, and I want to drink it.
I know. And, you know, my house always smells like some kind of... my favorites are the food scents or the fruit scents. I'm not a big perfume or earthy type of smell fan. A lot of people like those. You know, like the pine at Christmas is just a little too overwhelming for me.
What's that? Is it Yankee Candle? Remember how big it was at one time? With the, I don't know. Maybe it still is big. I just kind of fell out of that phase. For a minute, everybody was buying Yankee Candles, little the ones you melt.
For like $20 a candle?
Yeah, that's insanity.
You could literally make your own candles. These candles that I sent you, you know, the 8-ounce ones, you could make those for about $2, $2.50 maybe a candle.
Oh, that's great.
The smaller ones you can make for less. The expensive part of making candles is buying the wax and the jars. Now, if you go to a thrift store and get your own jars.
Like Goodwill.
Exactly. You can get them for a quarter a piece. Now, that cuts your cost down a lot. If you can find a place where you can actually pick up your own wax or pick up your own jars, that's the hard part.
Is there a secret place that you go to?
Well, I order most of mine online, and the shipping will kill you. That's what makes it expensive.
Probably costs more than the actual
it
product,
does.
Right?
It does. Yeah. But one time when I was driving through... Kentucky, I went through Kentucky and then down into Tennessee. I stopped in Knoxville at Aztec Candles and picked up my order of wax and jars, and I saved so much money.
Were you able to tour the facility and check it out?
Uh-huh. Yeah, they let you see everything, and they have a little showroom, right, you know, where you can sample all the scents. But the whole trick is finding a place to get your wax and your jars, and if you can buy your jars somewhere else, there are really great tips on how to save money making these candles.
So walk me through the process. So I got my, and we have just a few minutes left, so I got my wax. Mm-hmm. What's my next step?
First place, you need a big melting pot. Now, one of those roasting pans, like you make your Sunday dinner in, will work perfectly. Costs about
a low flat pan, like a medium depth?
You know the ones with the lids, they're oval shaped and they have a big lid?
Yeah.
I use that as my melting pot. It costs about $30.
And let me guess, once you do it once, you can't use that pot for cooking ever again, correct?
No, you don't want to. I mean, you probably could get the wax out, but I that's just my candle pot.
Got it.
Now, Lou Manfredini, Mr. Fix-It, makes fun of me because he talks about my candles, and I tell him I use reuse Speedway cups.
Yeah. Why
because
not?
Because they're very thick. They don't melt. So I will get like 6 or 8 Speedway cups set up with a dye in it. And then once my wax gets to the right temperature, somewhere between 175 and 190 degrees, I just scoop it into the Speedway cups. You let it cool down a little bit. Then you add about 1 ounce of scent per pound of wax.
Okay.
And you let it cool. Now, the trick that I found is I completely let it cool to where it hardens, and then I remelt it in a microwave. I have a special microwave that I don't use because it keeps the color consistency better.
Got it. This is all through trial and error, sure, that you discovered this.
I have tons of tips, and especially a way to save money doing this. But the way you were asking about how to get the wick
straight, yeah.
After I pour it in, I get a clothespin and clip it across the wick and lay it across the candle in the perfect spot. And just walk away, and you walk away, and it stays where you want it.
It's brilliant, because you know what? They are perfectly centered.
Mm-hmm.
I'm jealous of your wick ability.
Yeah, but like I said, it's easy to do. Some trial and error. You can make, for the holidays, you can make stuffed animals that you dip in scented wax, wrap them in plastic with some bows and ribbons, and give them to people as room fresheners.
That's a great idea.
They're very popular. Yep.
Wow, Veronica, who knew you were so crafty?
You could have some fun renaming your candles during the holidays.
Yeah, I see you got some great names here. You have berry creme brulee. You got the pumpkin spice. We got a little creamy nutmeg. So do you sell these?
I used to all the time. And I bring them in and I basically sell them at cost to the coworkers here. But when you sell them at craft shows, you can get anywhere from $6 to $7.50 per candle. And if it only costs you a couple bucks to make it, you can make some money at a craft show.
Well, this is awesome. Thank you so much for sharing, Veronica.
And keep those, too. Take them to your wife.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. I'm going to do that. She's going to love that.